Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello everyone and welcome to this special best of episode of Official Charts Take the Hit, where we'll be looking back through the highlights of Series 1. If you're new to us, 1, where have you been? And 2, you're actually really smart, because this is a kind of best bits roundup of the first series, so you're getting all the good stuff in one episode. If you're not familiar with Take the Hit yet, the format is basically me asking big names in the music world questions based around the UK's best-selling singles of all time. The questions are decided at random from our wonderful bingo machine, which did give us some grief throughout the series. We may have to upgrade for Series 2. So, for example, if they pull out number 56, the UK's 56th biggest selling single of all time is Spice Girls' Wannabe. So I might ask them, what did you want to be when you were younger? Get it? You can view the list of the biggest selling singles of all time in the UK on officialcharts.com. And if you're looking for a really random but amazing playlist, it's also available to stream on Spotify, Deezer and Apple Music. So go check it out there. First up, and kicking things off for our first series, was the brilliant Tom Walker. This episode came out fresh off his win at the Brit Awards for Best British Breakthrough Act, and his debut album, called What a Time to Be Alive, had just gone in at number one on the official albums chart. So it really was a good time to be alive for Tom Walker. After pulling out number 35 from The Machine, now the 35th biggest selling single is The Beatles' Can't Buy Me Love. I asked him what is the most expensive thing he's bought someone else, and the result was actually a really sweet story.
It's the ring for my fiance is the most expensive thing I've ever bought for somebody. Yeah, I think.
Hand designed.
Yes. I mean, it wasn't like crazy or anything. It's very. She's not. She's not really a flashy person. It's quite simple and elegant because that's, you know, what she likes. So I didn't spend like loads and loads on it, but I think it's the most I've spent on somebody that isn't me.
But what a nice thing to then buy, because I'm sure you don't really feel...
Believe I bought that ring for my fiancé. I should have nipped down the shop and got something cheap. And I don't feel like that at all. She loves it. Her face lit up when I gave her it, and it was a very nice reaction. So, yeah, it was worth it.
What was the engagement scenario? You do not have to tell me.
No, it's all good. I'm quite happy to talk about it. Yeah, we went to I had like 1 week off last year, and it was the week that I went to Sri Lanka with Annie. And a friend of ours lent us his amazing house, which was this like huge 5-bedroom house with another outhouse at the bottom with a pool. And we were at a gig one night, and Annie was talking to our friend, and he was just like, wow, yeah, of course you can just borrow the house. And I was like, yeah, really? And eventually he was like, yeah, absolutely, please go. So I told him all the plans, and he got loads of really nice stuff set up, like a couple of bottles of like wine and champagne and stuff. It was so amazing.
That's
it was like
so nice.
Ridiculous. So we were down by the pool. It was like the stars in Sri Lanka are like the most beautiful things you've ever seen. It's like, it really does look like one of those pictures you see on a MacBook screen, on a screensaver. And I put on some James Taylor, which is her absolute favourite, and got down on one knee, and that's it, really.
Oh, were you nervous?
I was the most nervous for that than I've ever been for anything in my entire life. Like, I completely fumbled putting on the song. My 3G wasn't working. I was all panicking. She's like, what's going on with you? You're right. I was like, no, I'm fine. Nothing's going on. It's all good.
Isn't it weird that, because people do get really nervous doing it.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you wouldn't be asking if you didn't think she wouldn't say yes.
Well, totally. I mean, it was the first day of the holiday, so I imagine if she said no.
Oh, God, that's a risk.
Like, it was a real gamble. But it was literally burning a hole in my pocket, that ring. And I just was like, I just need to get this out of the way because it was making me feel weird in all sorts of weird, strange ways. So I just had to get it done.
Actually, you know what? That probably is better in the sense as well that people, she might find it in the suitcase. It might fall out of a suitcase,
yeah,
a bag.
Totally.
Like, trying to hide it would just keep you nervous. Probably.
Yeah, I mean, so, I had it in my bag the whole way on the plane. And I was just like, oh, God. What if they, like, get it out on the other side because it's not VAT registered? I don't know. I just thought something was going to go wrong. So it all went smoothly, which is very nice.
Ah, isn't he nice? So number 19 also came out. And the 19th best-selling single is Will Young's Pop Idol winners single, Amazing, Anything Is Possible / Evergreen. In the theme of Anything Is Possible, I asked him what is the next career milestone he's sort of aiming for, given he has achieved so many in the past year.
Some milestones have definitely been hit, but there's definitely still a lot left.
Is there anything in the vague distance?
I went to see so many gigs with my dad at the MEN Arena. I've seen Foo Fighters there and Muse and B.B. King we saw there.
Amazing.
So many artists. I think Prodigy. Like, I've been to see everybody there with my dad. Me and him used to go to concerts all the time. And if I could play at the MEN Arena, you know, where I grew up getting into bands, the reason I'm here doing what I'm doing is because of those gigs. That would just be full circle, life complete. You know, that would be the one.
Yeah, was it? Was your first gig? Was that with your dad?
My first gig with my dad was actually, it was AC/DC in Paris when I think I was either 9 or 11 years old, I can't remember which, but I still remember it today. It was an open air, beautiful summer's day in Paris. There's two huge burlesque ladies either side of the stage, and as an 11-year-old, I was just like, what is going on here? Everyone was wearing light up devil horns. It was absolutely class. That's the moment I was like, I need to be a guitarist because that looks like so much fun.
That is an amazing first gig.
Yeah, it was. I even remember we couldn't figure out like the French ticketing system, so we had to jump the barriers, and it was like this whole ordeal. But it's one of those things that, you know, when you recall something, even though it was so long ago, it's so clear in my mind. Yeah. So it obviously had a massive impact on my life. And yeah, I was begging for a guitar every Christmas after that gig.
So cool. Mine was Steps.
Steps!
Which, you know, I still think is... You know,
I bet that was a banging gig.
Yeah.
Like Steps.
Made my dad take me. Sorry, Dad.
But he secretly loved it.
And it was when Steps were in the like red devil capes and horns for Bear the Devil, you know?
Right.
Yeah, that really stayed with me, apparently.
So it must be something about the devil horns, I think.
Yeah, it must be. Next up was US singer-songwriter Sarah Bareilles, who I met at Sony's offices in London, and she was promoting her new album called Amidst the Chaos, and the fact that her musical Waitress, which she wrote all the songs for, was kicking off its run in London after a few successful years on Broadway in America. So she was busy. Sarah pulled out number 33 from the machine, which is Britney Spears' debut single, Baby One More Time. So after we had a little fan out moment with that song, I asked her if there's been a moment in her career she'd like a do-over on. And my God, she had two great stories for this question. One involving Taylor Swift and the other about the Obamas. So the 33rd biggest selling single of all time is Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
Yes, girl, get it.
Number one in February 1999. It was 20 years ago.
Oh, jeez.
I can remember that very clearly.
Oh, yeah, me too.
It was everywhere.
It was everywhere. It was like, it was actually as if an alien had landed from another planet, and we
literally
were all like, who is this creature? Like, I'm obsessed.
Also, I don't really trust people that say they don't like that song.
I know.
How can you not like that
song?
It's
a good song. I was talking about this song kind of recently, actually. I actually think you just got to give credit where credit's due. I mean, it's a good song is a good song. And a lot of those pop songs, those super pop songs from the 90s especially, they were just easily played on a guitar or a piano. Like, they just exist. You know, yeah. We were pre, like, producer pop, where it doesn't really exist outside of the actual track. But, yeah, no, it's really cool.
The my question is there a moment in your career so far that you would like a do-over on?
Oh my, this is hilarious. Yes. I performed with Taylor Swift at her Staples concert, and we were doing my song Brave, and she was, so she's in the arena at Los Angeles, in Los Angeles, it's massive, I don't even know how many people, 50,000 people probably, something like that. So really big audience, and I had my in-ear monitors in, so, which is normal for that size stage.
Yeah.
And I was on the elevator lift at the back of the stage, so she's introducing me, I can hear all the screaming teenage girl fans, and so then the elevator starts to go up, and I come up, and I'm at the top of the stairs at the back of the stage, and the crowd's going wild, and I hear the music start, and the screams are so loud that I could not hear the pitch reference for the song even a little bit. I had no clue where the music was. I could hear the rhythm, but I could not hear the piano at all. And I just had to start singing, and I picked some notes out of thin air, and I could tell immediately that they weren't the right notes, and I pulled one of the in-ear monitors out, but I couldn't get over, I couldn't hear anything over the screams of the audience. I looked down at the music director, and he looks up at me with this, like, perplexed look on his face, like, what noise are you making right now? So I spent the first half of that verse just, like, searching for the pitch of the song. I had no idea where it was.
What song was it?
Brave.
You're doing Brave.
Yeah, my song.
Was this the 1989 tour that she did?
No, this was a tour I should probably know the name of, but I don't.
An earlier one. Oh, yeah. So this is before she was doing her big, like, presenting to the stage. And she did, like, a phase of...
Yeah, well, she was... Yeah, we were in the middle... It was that. It was where she was bringing people out every night. Was that the 1989 tour?
I think so.
Oh, cool. Do I sound old yet? What are the kids doing these days? Yeah. It was pretty embarrassing. But moved on. And I sort of wished I could do it over. Actually, the part I wish I could do over is how hard I was on myself about it. I was so hard on myself about it that I kind of, like, didn't have a good time. And that's the only thing. For all you people listening out there, that's the thing I wish I could do over. I don't care about fucking up. I actually care less about fucking up, and every time I screw up like that, I always, when I get a little ways away from it, I always look back and I'm always like, God, I was just so mean to myself about it. Relax, Sarah.
Did you get to meet Taylor?
Yeah. She's super sweet, really sweet, very generous host, really loving, and actually was so sweet about the fact that I was so upset about the song, and she was just really, really loving about the whole thing.
Looks like, kind. I guess it's one of those things that's very, it's very, like, artist specific. Like, most people can't relate to having an in-ear monitor, and, like, it's something I've never experienced. I can't imagine how lost I would feel.
Totally.
Not being able to hear anything.
No, but most artists have had something where there's a like a technological difficulty. And
is that when you keep seeing people on TV, like, just ripping out their earpiece?
Yeah.
And they're like, I can't hear.
Yeah, sometimes. So, yeah. Because the sound changes a lot from, based on how many people are in the room.
Right.
So if you might get a mix that sounds amazing in your ears, and then the sound changes quite a bit depending on who's in the room. Or at least it did for me.
And likewise, is there a really great moment in your career you'd love to relive again if you had the chance?
Oh, yeah. I've had some pretty... I think I would love to... Let's see. What? Oh, my gosh. There's so many, like... They're, like, it feels like champagne bubbles coming up right now. Like, all these, like, memories... This is going to sound like I'm bragging, but it actually was just, like, a really incredible night. And talking about Obama again. But I was at Obama's birthday party at the White House, and it was one of the cooler things I've ever gotten to do in my life.
Wow, that is really cool.
Because it was like everybody turned in their phones. It was casual. They're in slacks, and the kids are in jeans, and, like, it was just a house party. It was, like,
Who else was there?
You name it. Yeah, you name it. But it's like, you know.
That is, I can imagine, I'd want to sort of take in the room again.
Yeah, I think that's part of what I wish I could relive. But it was a beautiful reflection of kind of, you know, their interests and their relationships coming all together. I mean, people, political people, film, sports, journalism, art. Yeah. Like, it was just a huge cross-section of all sorts of interesting people. And it was just like a cool to be a fly on the wall there.
For episode 3, I spoke to Claire Richards from Steps, who had just come off the back of a successful Steps arena tour of the UK, and I went to that tour, so can confirm it was amazing. And she's also celebrating her debut solo album called My Wildest Dreams, debuting inside the top 10. After pulling out number 58 from the machine, which is Celine Dion's number one from 1997, Think Twice, it gave me the chance to ask her about an upcoming show she's got. It's No Big Deal. She's just doing a gig at Hyde Park where she's supporting Celine Dion. Incredible. So we asked her about that.
58.
So the 58th biggest selling single in the UK is Celine Dion, Think Twice. Which, you know, turn up for the books. That's come out because you're supporting Celine Dion.
I know.
That
and
is
that
amazing.
Was my karaoke song as well back in the day.
Was it?
Apparently it wasn't meant to be a single here.
Wasn't it?
No. And they didn't want it to be. Because it wasn't... It was released in America and Canada and it wasn't a hit. But it was huge here.
Massive hit. It was number one for 7 weeks in 1994. Yeah. And it sold 1.38 million copies.
Amazing.
It's only a little bit more than Heartbeat Tragedy.
Only a little bit. It's close, isn't it?
Are you excited for supporting?
I can't wait.
What's your strategy to meet Celine and what's...
I'm just going to sit outside her dressing room door for like 2 days, maybe. Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make her a sticky toffee pudding, I've decided.
Why sticky toffee pudding?
Because she likes it. Have you not heard her talk about it?
No, I haven't.
I went to see her, it wasn't last year, the year before, and she talked about sticky toffee pudding for about 20 minutes in between a song.
Oh my God, that's very Celine Dion, isn't it?
Yeah. I've got a few months to perfect my recipe. And I'm going to stand outside. Celine, Miss Dion, would you like some sticky toffee pudding?
My question is,
yeah,
is there a moment in your career, for better or for worse, that you've had to turn down a big offer?
I did go through a period of time where I just decided that I was going to do stuff that came my way, even if it terrified the life out of me. Hence why I was on the telly eating fire and stuff. It's not really...
Wait, what was that on?
It was an ITV show. And I learnt how to be a fire performer. And I can do that.
How did I miss this? What?
It was good. I should have won, I'm just saying.
Have you been offered anything that you've turned down?
I don't think so.
Have you been offered The Jungle?
No, I went for a meeting once, a long, long time ago. But... Yeah, normally, and it was at a time where I had just lost quite a lot of weight, but they didn't realise that I had. They wanted me to be fat when I went in, apparently.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that they can request such a thing.
Well, no, that was the excuse I got back, that I was too thin, which...
Bloody hell.
I know. It's just one of those... But I'm glad. You know when things like this happen?
Yeah.
Now, I watch it on TV now, and I love it. I love watching it.
And
the first couple of days, you're going, oh, I could do that. And then after a while, I think, oh, God, absolutely not a chance. I know I would last 2 seconds.
I don't know about you, but I really want to try Claire's sticky toffee pudding. I should mention, actually, we recorded this episode at Claire's house, which I still can't believe happened. And she was going to offer us some cake, but she wasn't happy with the way it turned out. I think it was a Victoria sponge. She wasn't happy with how it came out, so she didn't offer it to us. I was gutted. My chat with Claire finished with her coming out with number one from The Machine, so the UK's best-selling single of all time, which is Elton John's Candle in the Wind / Something About the Way You Look Tonight. It hit the top spot in 1997, of course, and I based my question on Something About the Way You Look Tonight. I used it as an opportunity to ask her about the colourful and quite frankly bonkers Steps outfits from over the years. Candle in the Wind / Something About the Way You Look Tonight. So it was released as a double A side around Princess Diana's death, obviously. For Diana, that's sacred, so I don't really want to touch that song.
Right.
But I did want to reference that you do have a candle that comes with your album, which I have.
Yeah. And I love a candle.
So thanks for doing that.
You're welcome.
It's in my bathroom.
Good.
But on something about the way you look tonight.
Yes.
So Steps had some, I'm going to say, outrageous outfits.
Right.
Costumes, yeah. You might say. Did you have a favourite, slash were any a real bloody annoyance? One that comes to mind for me is Deeper Shade of Blue.
Yeah.
When you're all blue, obviously.
Yeah.
Were there any favourite costumes or real nightmares?
Mine are always generally the same, but in a different colour. So I always went with kind of hipsters.
Yes.
Whether they be the big parachute Maharishi trouser.
Love the parachute trousers.
And a bikini top.
Yeah.
So that
you
was...
You had a good, actually, in that sense. You didn't have to...
Yeah, well, no, because that's what I chose. I never wanted to wear a skirt, so I never wore a skirt. Because I hate my legs.
Look, guys.
Yeah. Well, no, I hate my legs, and I never ever wore skirts when I was growing up. So that was my compromise, was getting my stomach out. So that was always pretty much, one way or another, it was hipsters in a crop top or a bikini top. The Deeper Shade of Blue video was a challenge, I'm not going to lie. I don't have that outfit, which is a bit annoying. The directors, because they were all kind of custom made for us, they kept them. So there was the rubber outfit, not great to get on. There was a lot of talcum powder involved.
Oh, because didn't that go like round your head? Am I imagining this?
No, the rubber one was the kind of Thunderbirds outfit.
Yeah.
And they decided that it would be great for us to dance in a rubber outfit on a light box. So
you can do anything.
It was hot.
God.
It wasn't nice. And then the other one, so that was our kind of alter ego character.
Yeah.
I was in head to foot lycra, and it had this big ponytail coming out the top, but to make it stand out, there was a block of wood like that inside, kind of resting on my head, making that go out big. And it was like that big, it was huge. And then there was no zip or anything, so I was sealed into it.
Oh my God.
With you know those clothing tag things that put labels on clothes in a shop? They sealed me up with that. So once I was in it, I was not getting out of it. Then a corset that was about that big, that was pulled in tight.
You really drew the short straw.
And then the last thing, well, there's two more things. The shoes, they wanted the heel to be a 9-inch nail. Then they realised that I wouldn't actually be able to walk. So there was an elf. Someone had to carry me everywhere once I had it on. And then the one thing that I managed to get out of, and I don't know why they changed their mind in the end, but I'm lying in this like red latex PVC paddling pool, if you like, and there were little cushions, and they were going to fill it with oil, and that they wanted me to writhe around in the oil.
There were
cans of it on the set. But then at the last minute, someone decided not to do it. Thank God.
Yeah, that would have been...
I had contacts in, which weren't comfortable to make my... We had all these weird contacts.
You definitely suffered for your art on this one.
I mean, at least I wasn't painted blue or gold like Lisa and H.
Yeah.
That was a struggle for them to get that off. And the gold thing, because apparently if you have to leave a patch of skin, because if you... You can suffocate if you completely cover yourself in the gold.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Good to know.
It's in a James Bond film as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Every day is a school day.
There you go. You learn something new, isn't it?
Steps definitely got more and more glittery as time went on, it felt. Because I remember every single had a different look completely.
Yeah, because initially, when we first started, there wasn't really any boy-girl bands.
No.
But there were lots of girl bands and there were lots of boy bands, and they all used to dress the same back in those days. So we were like, well, we can't do that because the boys, you know, we're just not going to wear the same stuff. So our only way of tying us together so everyone knew we were a band was the colour. So we would choose a colour and then go with that. So in the beginning, it was very much about finding stuff that was the same colour. Yeah. But then as we went on, we would just go and buy a massive roll of fabric and be like, Julie Andrews in the Sound of Music.
Just cut this to size.
And And we can never ever say that we were forced to wear anything, because we really weren't. It was all down to us. We'd say, you know, I want these trousers made in that fabric, and that's how we did it for a long time. Now it's a little bit more sophisticated than that. Yeah. But
I suppose it's good with Deep Shade of Blue, because it really sticks out in people's minds even now, that video.
Yeah, and I think actually if you watch it now, it stands up. It doesn't look dated at all. That was a really good video. I'd say that's probably our best video. So, and I don't think it looks nearly 20 years old.
No, it looks expensive.
Yeah, I think it probably was the most expensive one.
For episode 4, I met up with London singer-songwriter Freya Ridings, who's probably best known for her hit song Lost Without You. It became a huge hit on the official chart last summer after featuring on Love Island. And take the hit game aside, I had to clear up a recent personal discovery about the Ridings family, where her dad actually voices a key character in Peppa Pig.
It just reminded me, I read, and again, this is probably widely known.
What is it?
But I read that your dad is the Peppa Pig.
Yeah, Daddy Pig. The voice of Daddy Pig.
Daddy Pig.
Yeah.
Aww, what an amazing, like, sort of dinner party story to be able to tell everyone.
It's really
cool. By the way, I am Daddy Pig.
He doesn't really tell people. It's like when you kind of go in the supermarket, you'll just see little people, like, they can hear it, they don't know where it's coming from, and they're like, where is it coming from? Where is it coming from? And most of the time, like, it's so funny at, like, parties, like, sort of cues form of, like, mums being like, can I get a voice message? And it's just so sweet, just that. It's like he has a superpower. He can make little people really happy.
Did he have any idea what he was getting himself into when he did this? No. And how did he?
We know the family who, like, created it. And they were just a lovely, really creative family. And they just came up with this brilliant idea. And it was such a small niche thing for such a long time. I remember he came home when I was, like, 12. And was like, oh, yeah, I'm doing this. He does loads of weird, like, you know, he was, like, I don't know, a tortoise or something in this, like, video game that was big. I don't know. But it's just weird things where he comes home and it's like, oh, there's a pig, and something put pigs and a dinosaur. And I was like, that sounds like it's never going to take off. And then, like, this massive thing. I'm like, I was wrong.
As well as that, I got to ask her about the most bonkers song she's made for her debut album after she came out with number 3 from The Machine. The very bonkers Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen.
Well, it's a bit of a bonkers song, to say the least. Number 1 twice.
Yeah.
In 1975 and 1991, I think.
Yeah. I love Queen.
So my question based off it was, is there a really bonkers song that you've written that you haven't kind of, you're not putting out, or you've just made one somewhere? What the hell is that?
Actually, there's a song that is actually going to be the first song on the album, and it's quite, like, gothic and intense, and I remember writing it being like, this is way too, like, out there. It's not cool. Like, it's a bit, it's got some sort of, like, vampire imagery in it, because it's, like, really sort of, like, gothic-y and, like, quirky, and not what I thought a pop single would ever be. But I just wrote it being like, I just really like this kind of, like, music, this sort of, like, Celtic sort of inspired. But basically, in my head, there were drums, but I didn't have a drummer. So on the piano, I just go ding, 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 like a drum. And it's really sad. But at the same time, now I actually get to play it on stage with, like, this incredible drummer and, like, a whole band that comes to life. And I feel like at the time of writing it, I was really, like, embarrassed and being like, it's just this weird, like, gothic kind of, it doesn't really have a normal pop structure.
Right.
It's a bit creepy, but I love playing it, so.
And it's on the album.
It's gonna be the first, it's gonna open the album.
Oh, nice. Oh my god, I can't wait.
I'm really excited.
Closing out our first series of Take the Hit, I like to think it was in style because it was with Scott Mills, who is, of course, the host of the official chart show on Radio 1. He's also the host of the semi-finals of the Eurovision Song Contest with Rylan, which is something we got to talk about when he pulled out number 19. That number 19 again, Will Young, Evergreen, /Anything Is Possible. I got to ask him about his hopes for the future, what he's aiming for next in his career.
19.
So, 19th best-selling single of all time is Will Young, Anything Is Possible, /Evergreen.
Of all time?
Of all time. Number 1 in 2002.
Wow, that was
1.8 million sales.
Yeah, that was the time when Pop Idol was huge.
What a ridiculously big moment. Didn't it get more votes than the general election or something?
Oh yeah. Do you remember? I remember because I was working here then. I remember going outside Radio 1, it used to be in the old building down the road, and Gareth Gates' battle van was there, the battle bus, where they used to go around everywhere with this massive picture of his face on.
Those bloody cars.
I know. But if you think about it, that whole phenomenon at the time, because it wasn't like I felt like we'd never really had singing competitions, or not in our generation.
Not big, flashy, exciting ones like that.
And I remember it being such an event to watch. And literally, it felt at those times, and early days of X Factor, that everyone was watching it.
Yeah.
Like it was event television. It's like, I can't go out. It's a bit like in Sweden, they have a contest every year to find the person that to represent Sweden at Eurovision Melody Festivalen, and 70% of the country watch it. So if you go out if you go out for dinner in Stockholm on a Saturday night, which I have done, like, where is everyone? And they're just like, we're all watching Melody Festivalen. That's what it used to be like with Pop Idol.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It was like you had to watch it, and I seem to remember being quite gutted when Gareth didn't win. Even though Will was probably the better artist.
Yeah, I remember being a bit kind of
confused. And I voted. There's the first time I ever voted and the last time I ever voted for anything.
Didn't Simon Cowell storm off or something? He was not happy.
No, I'll tell you what that was. I probably did. But do you remember...
Was it Simon Cowell?
Yeah, no, I think it was the year after...
Michelle McManus
and Pete Waterman stormed
off.
He
did, yeah.
Because he was not happy. So he actually...
Yeah. Public had spoken.
I know.
So my question is, based on this.
Yes.
I'm going with anything is possible. What else is... Is there something you really want to achieve still in your career? Is there something you're still aiming towards?
Not the ever will, but if Graham Norton ever leaves Eurovision, because I already do the semi-finals on TV with Rylan, and again this year, not that I'm wishing you... any harm, Graham, but if he were to leave, then I would like to do the final.
Surely you're next in line for that.
Well, you never know.
You never know these, I guess.
But I think that would be really fun.
That'd be good. There's a pressure actually, with that job, though.
There is, but obviously I already do it on the two. A lot of people don't even realise there are semi-finals, but there are.
Yeah.
So on the Tuesday and the Thursday... I actually think that semi-finals are better because you get to see the really bad ones.
Yeah, exactly.
The ones that don't get through to the final. Bosnia, etc. Always Montenegro.
Yeah.
But, you know, some of them are deliciously bad. And
what was sad they don't get through.
Yeah,
so
I know.
People really see them.
So I get to see all of them. I feel like I'm kind of... I would be ready for it when that time, if it ever came, yeah.
Scott also pulled out number 22 from the bingo machine, which is Mark Ronson's Uptown Funk. And that led me to ask him about the last all-nighter he'd pulled, which, quite frankly, sounded ridiculous. Was this last night?
No, it wasn't last night. probably the Brits, actually.
Brits?
It was late, yeah.
It's always a good night.
Always good. I went to the Universal party. Oh, I mean, half a night I was trying to get one of my friends in. It was horrendous, and he'd lost his ticket. So I was just like outside waiting, going, please let us in. But
I hate all that.
Yeah, it's so annoying. But the Brits was good this year.
Wasn't Chic playing at? No, Nile Rodgers playing.
Yeah, Nile Rodgers, amazing. And then there was a bit where, because Grimmie was like, come and watch me DJ, and Nick Grimshaw. So I was like, okay, cool. So I went in to the party with him. Then I got chatting to people. He went up to DJ. So then I'm chatting away. And the next thing I know, I go up to see him. And he's DJing with Mel C from the Spice Girls. And she's playing the Spice Girls. So she's playing Wannabe, her own song, right, at the party. And I'm like, that's just weird. But weird things like that do happen at the Brits after shows, really. That Uptown Funk song is a very good record. But it does remind me of playing corporate gigs.
Oh, like, yeah, that's definitely a corporate gig.
Like
song.
They love it. Do you know what I mean? Like the
wedding wedding party song.
At the River Island Christmas party. It goes down a treat. There's men with like swinging their ties around their heads. So it just reminds me of like middle-aged men dancing.
Yeah, it's the one song they know.
Which is annoying because it's actually a cool song.
It's a really good song, yeah. It's undeniably good.
It's the same, though, as I associate I Got a Feeling, Black Eyed Peas, also in that bracket.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong if you play it. Everyone knows it. Grands know it. Like, young people know it. Middle-aged people know it.
Yeah.
Because it's an easy song to know.
One of those songs that just cut through to everybody.
But if you ever come and see me at your work's Christmas party, if I'm playing there, they'll both be played. Just let you know.
But at parties like the Brits, because obviously people are coming in out really one at a time. Mm. Do people just constantly come up and say hello and have chats? Do you get a moment's peace to hang out with a friend?
Generally, if it's artists, they're they're being like pulled here, there, and everywhere. So all you can go is go, hi, 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 and that's it, and they're gone. That happened with Lewis Capaldi actually this year. I was just like, oh, can you not stay and talk? And he was like, no, I've got to go and do this. So you don't actually really see, with artists, you don't really see them. They're kind of being dragged around doing various interviews. But it's fun just to see people that you might not see all the time from the industry, you know? Yeah. So yeah, it's a good night.
Oh, nice. And have you been to any of, so I've heard this on the grapevine through people at Newsbeat and stuff, you know, we work a lot with you guys at Radio 1, obviously. Nick Grimshaw has some infamous house parties, I hear. Have you been to any of those?
I have, yeah, I have one.
Like an absolute who's who of seriously famous people.
I think at this one we had Tom Daley, Florence, I can't remember who else, but it was just a beautiful thing. Just watching Florence ask Tom Daley about diving. It was just such an odd combo. And I think she then offered, he was like, can you show me how to dive in the bath? And he was like, no. I seem to remember
don't
that
do happening. That.
No, don't do that, everyone. But yeah, that was a weird party. I've not been to one for a while, though, to be fair. I don't even know if he has them anymore.
They sound lethal. They sound...
I don't know if he has them or whether I'm just not invited.
Oh. Note to self, everyone, find a way to get an invite to one of Nick Grimshaw's house parties, because they sound amazing. that's it from this series highlights episode of Official Charts Take the Hit. I really hope you enjoyed it. Please rate us and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts from. It would be really appreciated. We'll be back very soon for series 2. And in the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Official Charts. And head over to officialcharts.com, where you can see the weekly singles and albums charts, as heard on Radio 1. Plus, there's loads of other news and features and chart facts, and every charty thing you can think of is hopefully on that site somewhere. Thanks, everyone, and please join us again very soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.